Welcome to Healthy Lifestyles with Barbara Mendez on TribecaRadio.net. This is Barbara, and I'm a registered pharmacist and nutritionist in private practice in New York City. Thanks for tuning in. I'd like to welcome Natalie Ullman back to our show today. Natalie is a shiatsu practitioner and holds an advanced certificate as a Jiva Mukti yoga teacher. In 2006, she completed her coursework in the practitioner program at International School of Shiatsu, where she studied with noted author and founder of the International Schools of Shiatsu, Saul Goodman. Natalie has also studied with renowned nutritional expert Paul Pritchford on the healing properties of food, and today she and I will be talking about adopting a vegetarian lifestyle in order to nourish the body and nourish the soul, which also happens to be the name of our upcoming workshop. So welcome to the show today, Natalie.
Hi, Barbara.
It's good to have you here. So for those listening, the workshop is going to be taking place on Saturday, July 29th from 4:30 to 7 at Jiva Mukti Yoga School in Union Square, New York. If you're listening, since you are listening online, you might want to check out the Jiva Mukti website. And that website is www.jivamukti.com. Oh, jivamuktiyoga.com, sorry. And that's JivaMukti yoga.com. For more information on the workshop, or you can check out my website at www.lifestylenutrients.net. So, it's good to have you here. I love that we're talking about this topic. So what inspired you to do this workshop? Because it was interesting. I came up to you and said, let's do a show on developing a vegetarian practice as a spiritual practice. And you said, that's so interesting because I want to do this workshop. So what inspired you to do it?
Well, a lot of yoga students are really interested for their spiritual practice in transitioning to vegetarianism and veganism. And I hear from a lot of them about the different challenges that they run into. Mm-hmm. And so I was inspired to teach the workshop to kind of help address some of those challenges and some of the misconceptions. I hear a lot of misconceptions mm-hmm. from them about it, and it seems like people hit a challenge with it and then completely drop out of the process and kind of stepping back. And so kind of stepping back and saying, okay, how can I adjust this practice mm-hmm. of food as conscious spiritual practice so that I can be more successful mm-hmm. in moving towards a vegan diet.
You know, it's funny that you mentioned practice and that your emphasis is on practice, because I had created these 5-week workshops integrating yoga and nutrition for weight management. And I specifically did it in a format that we focused on one thing a week. So for the first week, we like focus on the sugar and the impact sugar has on our bodies. And then we give up sugar. And I reinforce the idea of practice. Because until you create like a foundation through practice, you can't keep jumping ahead. Otherwise, the whole foundation crumbles and then you keep going back to your old habits. And then it's like always starting the process over again.
Right, right. And I think that, it's funny, as a yoga teacher, I think of it in terms of yoga. Like we have one day we can't do headstand. Doesn't mean we throw the practice out or we never do headstand again. Mm-hmm. Instead, we'll kind of investigate, well, how do I do this so it feels more comfortable and healthy to be in my headstand? And so I think we need to do the same thing with our relationship with food.
Yeah, I agree. And what are the challenges that some people come up against that when you talk to your students? What do you hear from them?
A lot of lifestyle issues, right? Like it seems very challenging in terms of making their own food or finding food. They don't know where to find food. Very mm-hmm. practical, you know, mm-hmm. knowing what they need to eat, certain sense of limitation in variety. So they find themselves applying. We're used to, when we're meat eaters, many of us just kind of, we take the object, we cook it, and then we eat it.
Right.
So that same kind of habit carries itself over into vegetarianism and veganism, and so we find we're bored or, it just doesn't seem to be fulfilling. And it's a whole different way of relating to food mm-hmm. is what it is. Really, you've got a much huger number of ingredients and possibilities and things that you can take and shape. But we need to create a different relationship with our food mm-hmm. in order to kind of open the doorway to that experience.
Yeah, I know exactly what you mean. And I find that people often, when they don't really think about it and don't give it that sort of attention, in attempting to become vegetarians, they'll often resort to eating bagels and lots of pasta. And then they start to not feel well. And then that kind of makes them go back also. They mm-hmm. think, well, I miss meat. It's not that you miss meat or that your body is needing the meat. It's that your body is not needing all that refined food is really.
Right, exactly. So this whole issue of kind of, one of the goals of being a vegan as a spiritual practice is that this is a diet that's going to reconnect us with the earth in a different way. So as part of that, we need to be working with foods that are really close to the earth. Mm-hmm. So we're going to be less successful if we're eating a soy dog than if we're, you know, working with legumes and rice and really getting in that process of creating real intimacy with the products and gifts that the earth makes available to mm-hmm. us.
Mm-hmm. And how do you plan to convey that? Because that's a huge, it's very vast, you know, a spiritual practice of any kind. To convey that to anybody is a big undertaking. So how do you, like, what's your approach going to be? Like, is just getting back to the earth, making things simple, or is there a lot of other things involved?
So we're going to talk about systematically how to apply mm-hmm. this in our lives. Mm-hmm. So the first thing being kind of discussing some of the qualities of nature. Now, one of the things is we could, each and every one of us, as we approach food, there's many systems that are available. Mm-hmm. And so we could take any one of those systems and use them as kind of a doorway to step into this intellectual understanding of it and create a relationship with food, mm-hmm. right? It doesn't matter. Like we talked about, you do that with a scientific approach mm-hmm. to your food. Mm-hmm. So we're going to start out looking at the three qualities of nature, mm-hmm. which is according to Ayurveda. We won't be studying Ayurveda, but this is just a great doorway into it. Mm-hmm. So tamas, rajas, and sattva. Mm-hmm. And so the diet that is completely harmonious and balanced with the earth and with our spirits and with our physical bodies is the sattvic diet. So mm-hmm. it's like, how do we get ourselves from the place of tamas to sattva? So let me just describe those three qualities for you.
Yeah, because people are listening and don't know what that is.
Tamas is the quality of darkness, mm-hmm. being completely absent of life force, inertia, attachment. It would be complete unconsciousness. Mm-hmm. So in the moments when we're primarily interacting with our world through that quality of nature, we might be eating a lot of junk food mm-hmm. and, you know, watching things that are not enlightened or, you know, maybe being unkind to our friends, all these different ways that kind of darkness or ignorance steps into our lives.
Would it be like hoarding would be another example of
it? Hoarding could, yes, it would definitely be an example of it.
Because I'm just thinking of somebody that I met that came to see me as a client, and he was a man who was very successful, who had accomplished a tremendous amount financially and, you know, professionally in his life. And he had this problem that all day long he was fine, but then at night he could not stop eating. He said, I was not even hungry, but I could just, it's like he just piled in 5 days worth of food between the hours of 9 and midnight. And it was a sense of, my feeling was, this is a man who's used to getting what he wants. He's just greed. It's just greed. It's greed, the greed that he has for money and for, you know, and I don't mean greed in a critical or a negative, but just right. like that hoarding sensation is that, that's what, and there was no way to change his eating habits until he stopped that mental process that he had.
Right.
Do you know what I mean?
Yeah. So the way we begin to move out of that space is through creating awareness, mm-hmm. right? So what is that kind of compulsive eating? Mm-hmm. Instead of responding really to what your body needs or what is best for you on any of the higher dimensions, you mm-hmm. know, health or consciousness or anything, mm-hmm. you're just going into this place of kind of complete habit and unconsciousness of what you're doing. Mm-hmm. And maybe the first step out of that is when we begin to notice. So he comes to you, you know, mm-hmm. oh, you know what, I need to change this. And so that's the first step to the next level. So did that answer your?
Yeah, yeah.
Okay, so the next level is rajas. And rajas is kind of activity and intellect. It's that part of us that is fiery and very active. Mm-hmm. And I mean, all of these things are like the Cliff Notes descriptions of it.
Sure.
But we can use this quality of rajas to get us out of tamas, so we can start to access information of different kinds, mm-hmm. right? Either by talking to somebody like you or just starting to, like, look in some books. What do I need to know? And, like, pay a little more attention in terms of what we're doing. So this shows up in our process of mm-hmm. food transitioning as that phase where we're kind of in a set system.
Mm-hmm. Right? So you're tamasic, and you're in this mode of eating, you know, whatever, greed or whatever it is, and then you first have to go to raja, you're saying? To go to that other intellectual thinking part of it to get, amass information before you could really create balance.
Theoretically, mm-hmm. it would be possible, mm-hmm. I believe, to get from, but the kind of traditional prescription mm-hmm. is to use Rajas to get yourself out of tamas.
Okay.
So, I mean, it's like some people become enlightened instantly the moment they have an insight, or they become completely conscious and aware.
Mm-hmm.
And it may happen that that gift comes to us, that all of a sudden we're like, oh my gosh, I can't relate to food like this anymore. I just need to start paying attention to what I feel like and what things taste like.
Mm-hmm.
And it can happen. Mm-hmm. It can happen pretty quickly.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Well, you know, when we come back, we're going to talk about this a little bit more, and we're going to talk about a sattvic diet, which is a balanced diet, but we need to take a commercial break. You're listening to Healthy Lifestyles with Barbara Mendez on TribecaRadio.net. My guest today is Natalie Ullman, and we're discussing how to adopt a vegetarian lifestyle as a spiritual practice. Please stay tuned. We'll be right back. Welcome back to Healthy Lifestyles with Barbara Mendez on TribecaRadio.net. My guest today is Natalie Ullman. Natalie is a shiatsu practitioner and an advanced Jivamukti yoga teacher. She also has spent considerable time studying with Paul Pitchford, a renowned nutritional expert on the healing properties of food. And she and I are discussing today how to adopt a vegetarian diet as a spiritual practice, and we're doing this in preparation for a workshop we'll be doing July 29th at Jivamukti Yoga School in Union Square. The name of the workshop is Nourishing Your Body, Nourishing Your Soul, correct? Is there more to the title than that? I think there is. Right?
Transitioning to a vegetarian diet, vegetarian/vegan, because I didn't... Well, both things will apply to both.
Okay.
Right?
Okay. And if you want more information on that workshop, and if you want to check it out while you're listening to our show today, please check out the Jivamukti website at www.jivamuktiyoga.com. And Jivamukti is spelled JivamuktiYoga.com. Or you can check out my website at www.lifestylenutrients.net. So before we went to break, we were talking a little bit about the nature of food, the qualities of nature according to yoga. So tamas, rajas, and sattva. And tamas was, you were saying, the darkness, the greed, the compulsive eating, maybe.
Kind of unconsciousness, I think, is a lack of awareness.
Okay,
that's a good way to think of it.
As one extreme, right?
Mm-hmm.
And then in order to start taking the journey towards balance, that often the best way to go is just kind of go to the other extreme, rajas, which is fire and...
Yeah, well, I wouldn't say rajas is the other extreme. Sattva would be the complete opposite of tamas.
Okay.
But it's kind of like, so what will happen is if you're doing an awareness practice like yoga or meditation or any kind of spiritual practice that people are doing, prayer, whatever they're doing, eventually your consciousness is going to change, right? And that will change your choices in food. However, if you want to deliberately kind of invoke that change, you would go to rajas. It's almost like they're more linear
in terms of
how conscious they are.
So you can already be ready to just become aware about food and pay attention to how everything feels in your mouth and feels in your body. And that way you can go from being tamasic into sattvic, right?
Well, what I said was basically, yeah, your awareness can shift that fast.
Uh-huh.
But because that's just always a possibility in doing awareness practice. But if we want to consciously invoke that, then we're going to do it through kind of going through a doorway of knowledge and understanding and intellect, which would be more rajasic.
Right, right.
Kind of active, intellectual kind of approach to things.
And don't you kind of find, like I do with my clients, when I explain to them, when I give them the background, the education on a certain property of food or a certain property, just a certain behavior, when they fully understand it, it's so much easier for them to make change.
Right. Well, I think the really interesting thing that you say there, you really emphasize fully understand it. Now, that full understanding is a development of a relationship with what you're teaching them, as opposed to just blindly applying it.
Mm-hmm.
So if we just blindly apply it, then we're not going to cultivate this conscious awareness of food. But if they really learn it and take it in, then that's going to take them to this next level of awareness, which eventually they would be completely sattvic and have such a balanced relationship with food that they can leave their teacher behind.
Yeah, yeah. And they might not even be aware that that's what's happening.
Right.
But that's what actually does happen. The more you embrace something, the more you understand something, and the more you cultivate that, the more you move on into the next element or the next level or whatever it is. I want to talk a little bit about awareness of tastes and cravings and things like this as a practice, but I want to start out this segment by talking a little bit about a conversation you and I had the other day because it applies to awareness. We just finished class and you said to me out of nowhere, basically, you're very analytical, you live in your mind very, you know, a tremendous amount or whatever, something along those lines. And it was like, okay, how do you know that? And what
I'm your yoga teacher.
That's true. But what made you say that to me now? And you said, well, I could just see it in your posture when you're doing class and when you have a lot of tension in your neck, which I do. And I, you know, whatever, there's a whole story about my neck, like not in the back of my neck, in the front of my neck. And you said, well, when somebody has a lot of tension in their neck, then that usually means that there's a disconnect between their mind and their body. And why that was so profound when you said it to me, because it came out of nowhere. So when somebody says something like that to you that's so true, out of nowhere, out of context, it's like somebody hits you, you know, is because I spend a lot of my time I spend a good amount of my time often doing things, eating things that my mind says, have it, and my body's like, please don't have it. I'm so over the coffee or whatever it is. Please don't drink that or don't, you know. But my mind kind of imposes its will, and I don't pay attention to my body, the cells of my body saying, I don't want that. So it was so interesting that you said that to me because when after that conversation, I just made it. I said, that's it. I'm practicing paying attention to what my body tells me.
Right. Well, it's interesting. So sattva could be paralleled to this state of yoga. Mm-hmm. And what it is this state of kind of multi-dimensional awareness, mm-hmm. being aware of everything. So, you know, it's interesting. It's like your awareness was already there and you're not listening.
Right.
When your body's telling you something. So as we move towards sattva, we're moving towards a place where it's like, yeah, we're listening to that subtle level of the body, and it's like this whole awareness, which is why I could see it in your yoga practice, you know? Mm-hmm. So it's funny, I don't even think of it as being out of the blue, because as we're moving towards yoga, we're seeing everything in one piece. So, you know, we look at ourselves and we look at the world around us as all these things kind of interplaying, you know, the same thing that affects your relationship with food, affects your asana practice, mm-hmm. and your relationship with your family and your friends. I mean, it's all woven together. So as we work with our food, we're actually changing our life mm-hmm. on all those different levels too.
Yeah, absolutely. So awareness is really a vital part of changing your diet in any way. Even if you're a person that just wants to lose 10 pounds, changing your awareness about food is essential.
Right. And actually, Paul Pitchford says that that's really the key to making this transition to a sattvic diet. Mm-hmm. So, you know, the first thing to ask a client is, you know, what's your awareness practice?
That's a really good question.
Yeah, and their ability or our ability to kind of move forward with that is going to be directly related to that. So even though I may present with a different or with the same question as you would if I was going for a consultation with him, or, you know, mm-hmm. He might give us completely different answers based mm-hmm. on, as a matter of fact, he does, mm-hmm. based on how much of a history of awareness practice you have.
Mm-hmm. And what would be an answer to that? Like, what's your history of, like, what's your awareness as opposed, or give me an example of somebody that you know that has maybe no awareness and what their answer would be to you.
Right. So, I mean, the best example I can think of was having been there and studied with him, mm-hmm. and we had these consultations, and I'd been practicing yoga for 13 years, so he gave me something called a lavender cleanse to mm-hmm. do for my liver. Mm-hmm. And somebody who had a similar challenge, who hadn't had all these years of yoga, and it was funny because over dinner we're all saying, well, what did he tell you to do? And she was like, well, how come I'm not on the lavender cleanse, you know? And she went and asked him about it, and I don't know exactly what answer he gave her, but in class he addressed this lavender cleanse was kind mm-hmm. of... And it was very intense to go through the lavender cleanse on a consciousness level. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. So
I'm sure
I could understand that.
Yeah. What did she have to do?
I don't remember. It was much more kind of standard. And she was actually someone who was very much relating on a scientific level to her food and hadn't done spiritual practice of food at all yet. Mm-hmm. So her work was more in the realm of spirit first to build the foundation for making the move.
Mm-hmm. All right. Well, I want to talk about awareness of cravings because I think that that is one of the reasons people kind of always fall back and into their old habits is because their cravings kind of take over.
Mm-hmm.
And they feel like they give in to them, and then they mentally they castigate themselves, and you're a bad person, or whatever they say to themselves, and they go back to starting over again. There's a reason we have cravings, no?
Yeah, and this is a great tool, great easy tool. Who knew spiritual practice could be so much fun, right? So, can I just your craving French fries now? Mm-hmm. Kind of the Whole Foods approach to this is that that craving is going to be telling you something, but you just want to choose the whole food answer to that same craving. So what does a French fry include?
Potatoes.
Well, potato.
Salt.
Salt is a really interesting one because, good salt has minerals that we can use, right? Mm-hmm. So, yeah, there might be some, mineral that you need some support with.
Although I doubt McDonald's salt has...
No, well, what I'm saying is foods don't, and this is part of the reason why we get into this compulsive craving, is that we go for the French fry instead of what the body is really wanting.
Mm-hmm.
So give your body a baked potato. Mm-hmm. Give your body a healthy choice of oil. Give your body a healthy source of minerals when you're craving French fries, and then your cravings for French fries are going to diminish because you're giving the body what it needs. But it's a tool for us to kind of look at what does my body need. Mm-hmm. Without resorting to a system.
Mm-hmm. Okay, when we come back, I want to talk about the French fries because it's really more about it's about nourishing the kidneys. There's some depletion going on in the kidneys because the salt is craving and the potato craving. So when we come back, I want you to go because you had a specific situation with this. So I want you to tell us about that. Okay. So you're listening to Healthy Lifestyles with Barbara Mendez on TribecaRadio.net. My guest today is Natalie Ullman. We're talking about adopting a vegetarian lifestyle as a spiritual practice. Please stay tuned. We'll be right back. Welcome back to Healthy Lifestyles with Barbara Mendez on TribecaRadio.net. This is Barbara, and I'm a registered pharmacist and nutritionist in private practice in New York City. Thanks for tuning in. So we've been talking to Natalie Ullman today. Natalie is a Jivamukti yoga teacher and a shiatsu practitioner. She's also studied extensively with Paul Pitchford, who is a renowned nutritional expert and has written the book Healing with Whole Foods, which is really like the Bible of how to eat, how to adopt a healthy lifestyle that's very balanced. I love that book. And since we started talking about doing this workshop together, I've been really looking at it, looking up the properties of the foods that I'm eating. And it's a great practice to even just do that, I have to say. And anyway, we're doing a workshop next Saturday, July 29th, at Jivamukti Yoga School in Union Square. It's from 4:30 to 7 in the afternoon. It's about adopting a vegetarian lifestyle as a spiritual practice. And the name of the workshop is Nourishing the Body, Nourishing the Soul. If you would like more information about the workshop and you want to check it out while you're listening to our show today, please check out the Jivamukti website at www.jivamuktiyoga.com. So before we went to break, we were talking about raising awareness around your cravings and what that could possibly mean. And you had brought up the example of the French fry. So
let's talk about French fries.
French fries. I'm getting hungry now. but even in the best French fry, even the highest quality French fry, you're still talking about a starch that's been fried and then salted. So I find, and I'm sure you can concur, you will concur on this, is that people who crave salt tend to have some sort of kidney imbalance. Usually it's high stress or maybe some sort of depletion due to excessive stress over a long period of time.
Mm-hmm.
But you have a specific story you were telling me the other day about the contrast between eating a French fry and eating a sweet potato, because what kidneys are really looking for is the nourishment, and sweet potatoes nourish the kidneys, right?
Right. So, yeah, specifically kidney yin. They're one of the best kidney yin nourishers. But it's interesting because I think we can get a little intimidated with the ideas.
Mm-hmm.
So what I'd like to communicate to your listeners is that they don't have to master Oriental medicine
right.
to kind of – and I mean, actually, it's interesting because how did I get to the point where I referenced that, I followed a craving I was having, mm-hmm. you know, and then I was like, oh, yeah, that's right. And then I went back and kind of traced what was going on in my body. And these issues of kidney imbalances are something that frequently comes up for people who are transitioning into vegetarianism or veganism. And the whole issue of kind of stress and being ungrounded and maybe not as functional as we'd like to be is partly because we're not nourishing that grounding energy. Mm-hmm. So it may take the form of a craving for a salt or a craving for a bad fat. Mm-hmm. And so that's what might draw us into kind of a tamasic, we had talked about, unconscious mm-hmm. response to that. And instead, I would say, okay, well, you know what, don't abandon the vegetarianism. But instead, follow what your body's telling you mm-hmm. and make a conscious choice. You know, even in that case, a baked potato with, you know, a little flax oil mm-hmm. and a dash of, you know, true Celtic sea salt
right.
is going to, better seaweed is probably better there, but is going to provide you a little more of what the body's needing, and you don't need to master the scientific mm-hmm. Aspect of it.
Yeah, it's just funny because my mind always goes there. I seek to understand, because in understanding is when I am able to make those changes. It's like, oh, wow, that's what it does. Well, then that's easy for me to embrace.
Right. Well, and I think those are good tools to have, you mm-hmm. know, and know that we build that intellectual understanding through that kind of, okay, I'm needing this. Let me go look it up. But I think it's important to understand that to some extent we can trust the wisdom and intuition of the body and then verify it. You don't need to have a complete mastery of nutrition in order to be a successful vegetarian, which right. is one of the things I hear from the students is they right. feel like they need to learn so much and it overwhelms them a right. little bit. So, you know, you can take it one day at a time, and as you respond to what your body's telling you you need, you educate each little bit. Yeah.
So what do you tell somebody when you're talking to somebody and they're asking you, when somebody says you have a lot of cravings, what do you suggest that they start doing? Just that, follow the craving, where is mm-hmm. it going? But what do you, to help them raise the awareness, do you offer any sort of advice or any sort of information that might give them that like aha moment so that they can maybe have an easier time?
Well, so this is where doing another awareness practice is going to facilitate your ability to have an aha moment.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, my awareness practice is yoga and meditation and food now.
Mm-hmm.
But what builds your ability to kind of, so when we meditate, we're cultivating, or when we practice asana, mm-hmm. yoga practice, we're cultivating our ability to kind of stop instead of going into a habitual reaction.
Mm-hmm.
So that would be facilitated by doing additional kinds of awareness practices. But you can just develop the awareness through, okay, mm-hmm. I'm going to be aware.
Right.
I'm not going to. And that starts the ball rolling. And so having faith in that, I think, is really important.
Mm-hmm. So any mindfulness practice?
Mindfulness, yeah, mm-hmm. that's a really nice word for it.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I like awareness as a word, but mindfulness mm-hmm. is a different way to kind of connect with the idea. Just being more mindful as we're walking through, and that's going to carry through. With the whole cultivation of a healthy sattvic taste. And then some of these things that you crave, then it's just going to completely go away, because at a certain point, when you've created a relationship with taste, you're not going to want to eat something that's dead or processed. It's not going to appeal to you anymore.
Mm-hmm.
So
that's true. Mm-hmm. Speaking of cravings, you had mentioned that when somebody has a lot of sugar cravings, you would recommend that they eat squash or carrots.
Mm-hmm.
Do you find fruit too sweet? Or is it because you mentioned those specifically?
Yeah.
Because I usually recommend like an apple with a little bit of almond butter or something mm-hmm. like that, just to give it some balance. But you didn't include fruit, so I'm just curious what your thoughts are about that.
I think that they do different things. So fruit is more. I think it's interesting that you say fruit with a little bit of almond butter, because the almond butter is going to give you the sense of building and mm-hmm. nourishing. But you know, in the traditional systems, sweet is like. It's building,
mm-hmm.
you know, that's what it is.
Mm-hmm.
It's building and nourishing.
Mm-hmm.
And so fruit has a cleansing quality to it. And when we really sit with our fruit and taste it, except for maybe a banana. Mm-hmm. Very often there's like astringency or sourness or all these other flavors that are kind of, mixed in. Mm-hmm. But squash and bananas are kind of nice doorways into understanding and creating a relationship with the sweet flavor. And they're also very nourishing foods, so we can make that connection with how sweet grounds us and centers us. And
so it's more of a pure sweetness than mm-hmm. a fruit that would have any sort of other properties to it other than
right.
just sweetness.
Well, and also since fruit has these kind of cleansing qualities about it, and we know that when we eat mm-hmm. fruit, right? Mm-hmm. Don't you kind of feel
sure.
like you're being purged? Mm-hmm. And I mean, we could talk about it in terms of its astringent qualities make
right.
it cleansing,
right.
you know, through the traditional systems, but just to kind of talk about how we're relating a personally to our food,
mm-hmm.
yeah, you tend to kind of want a fruit when you're feeling like lightening up and getting rid of some stuff.
Sure.
So this sweet flavor, when we're craving the sweet flavor, traditionally it's said to be that we're craving that nourishment.
Mm-hmm.
So we would look towards a building food instead. And I think that's why intuitively you're thinking, oh, almond butter.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, with the fruit. You know, there's part of you that's like doing that.
Because I'm trying to create balance for them. Because I find like, okay, and this might be, you might have, I'm sure you have something to say about this, but if they just were to eat the apple, and if they have really strong sugar cravings, if they were just to eat the apple or just to eat the banana, my concern is that it's going to trigger like a strong mm-hmm. glycemic response that might get them to eat regular sugar. So I just feel slap some almond butter on there to like slow down the
right.
glycemic response.
But think about like squash is going to have a low or glycemic,
sure.
right?
Mm-hmm.
And also, I mean, the granddaddy of all great whole food sweets is that whole grain,
mm-hmm.
right?
Mm-hmm.
And that's really going to give you some sustain. If you really go with like a brown rice, you know, mm-hmm. food of the gods, the
right.
brown rice,
okay.
you know, that's going to keep you sustained for a long time.
That's
so,
true.
You know, and I feel like that's a deeper sweet, partly because of that, because when we're really nourished, we're very sustained for a long time.
Well, you know, which brings me to chewing, because when you chew brown rice, it just gets sweeter and sweeter and sweeter. And the same thing with squash
mm-hmm.
or anything else. It just, the sweetness just keeps coming out. And ideally, you should be chewing your food to the point that you are experiencing that.
Yeah, and I'm glad you brought that up, because that's actually on our list at the workshop of things you need to do to be a successful vegetarian is really chew your food.
Yeah.
And that's a great awareness practice.
Mm-hmm.
That's
and
a great
it's
awareness.
It's hard to do. I mean, it's hard. Mm-hmm. Like, I remember I went to Ann Wigmore last summer, and they asked us to chew every bite of food like 30 times and like liquids 30 times. It's like coming, it's going down the back of your throat, and I'm like, how do I stop so I can chew it? But it's really hard, you know? I mean, we chew our food like maybe 5 chews and it goes down.
But it's actually really interesting when you take that on as a conscious practice,
mm-hmm.
the way you feel nourished after a meal like that. And it's funny because we're so used to like reading while we eat and talking while we eat.
Mm-hmm.
And now that I've been kind of working with how to teach people about conscious food, you know, I find the more I do it, the more I really need to just sit and be present to my food. And then I feel so nourished by it on so many different levels. I mean, this is partly where this concept of nourishing the soul comes
mm-hmm.
from. It's such a healing practice to just, you know what? Take 20 minutes and
mm-hmm.
make yourself something nice to eat and
mm-hmm.
love yourself while you're making it. You know, really, like do it as a gift for yourself or your partner or whatever. It doesn't have to be this big. And then to sit down and take the time to really chew it
mm-hmm.
And take it in.
You can see it's working for you. You have a lot of energy. Okay, so we need to take a commercial break. When we come back, we'll talk a little bit more about adopting a vegetarian lifestyle. Please stay tuned. We'll be right back. Welcome back to Healthy Lifestyles with Barbara Mendez on TribecaRadio.net. I've been having the pleasure of talking to Natalie Ullman today. Natalie is a shiatsu practitioner, an advanced yoga, Jiva Mukti yoga teacher, and she has also studied with Paul Pitchford, a nutritional expert on the healing properties of whole foods. And we're talking about adopting a vegetarian lifestyle as a spiritual practice, and we'll be hosting, or Natalie will be hosting, a workshop, and I'll be assisting next Saturday, July 29th, from 4:30 to 7 at Jiva Mukti Yoga School in Union Square. So if you'd like more information on that workshop, please check out my website at www.lifestylenutrients.net, or you can go to the Jiva Mukti Yoga website at www.jivamuktiyoga.com. So Natalie, when you had sent around your like outline of the class, the one thing that my mind really latched onto, because I thought it was so interesting, was the idea that people who crave chocolate and coffee are really, what they're really craving is cleansing and detoxing. I had never seen it that way, but when I look around and I look at and I think about my own experience with it, when I do crave chocolate, or when I actually don't crave chocolate, but when I do crave coffee, it's usually because I've had alcohol, like the night before I had some wine with dinner or something like that. And I just always thought, well, I'm tired, you know, the wine made me tired, but in fact it could be something else. So tell me about that. That's really, it's your body always trying to seek balance.
Right, right. And I think it's interesting, you know, I mean, I was aware of that because the bitter flavor is associated with cleansing. And one of the things that's really interesting is when I interview my clients all, and I ask them, what flavors do you favor and what do you reject? And I'll get sweet almost all the time. And then when I ask them about it, it's like, okay, what kind of sweet are you craving? Is it cookies or is it? And then they think about it and then they're like, oh, chocolate. You know, so it's a very distinct kind of thing. And there might be some sweet craving in there, but I think it's, you know, from talking to people, that more often it's this bitterness that they're craving in the chocolate.
So would an alternative to that be like getting into the practice of putting lemon juice in water, let's say, for the bitterness?
I wouldn't consider lemon juice a bitter.
Really?
I'd consider it a sour.
Okay.
And I mean, this is, you know, either way, you're not going to go wrong with it. Lemon juice isn't going to hurt you, because it's going to cleanse your, it just might not be as satisfying. It's going to cleanse your liver. And it might be, if you're craving a sour flavor, you know, you don't need to know it's going to cleanse your liver, but that might be why. But I would think that this is a different kind of cleansing. So if we think about a bitter, just, and this is part of creating the relationship with food. And in my own learning, like I went through much with my teachers where I would say, what do you mean lemon's not bitter? And they say, no, arugula is bitter.
Right.
And broccoli is bitter. And so that sent me back to my dandelion root.
Artichokes, yeah. Aren't artichokes bitter too?
Yeah, I don't know.
Okay.
Offhand, I don't really.
Okay.
But that sent me back to my kitchen, where I had to be present to my food in a different way. Mm-hmm. And so
I often tell my clients to just add a handful of arugula to your salad, because arugula is a very strong tasting green. So many people may not enjoy it as a, you know, to have their salad made up entirely of arugula. But I'll tell them, just add a handful of that, and it gives it more nutrition. And it will help detoxify the liver. It will provide some cleansing properties. So,
and it's interesting. I wonder if those real strong bitters that occur in nature are just so intense for us that we tend to reach for something that's a little bit easier,
right.
Feels a little easier, you know, than taking the arugula. So maybe one of the things to keep in mind is that we might not need such a high quantity of arugula as the amount of coffee we might be craving,
right.
You know.
Right.
It might work faster. So.
True. Put Starbucks out of business. No. So how do you know, like, let's say you're on this path, and you are, you know, cultivating awareness, and you are being more mindful of your diet. How do you know that sign? How do you know progress is being made? How do you know that you're getting somewhere? Like, what are there signs that one should like watch out for?
I find the big thing is awareness of taste, and awareness of how things are acting in your body and how you're feeling after you eat things. That starts to change. And just a wanting of things that are good for you.
Mm-hmm.
So like the real banner day is the day you wake up and you want, you know, a whole grain, brown rice for breakfast instead of, you know, the scone at Starbucks, then you know you're like on the way. There will come a day where you're going to want it, and it's not going to require the same amount of discipline as going through this process of like, okay, I'm craving salt. What does that mean? What do I need? Mm. And that's really something to celebrate.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. You know what I often have for breakfast? And it's so funny. People just think I'm a little nutty, but I'll have roasted cauliflower and like a quarter of an avocado. And I love that. And with the avocado, with the fat and the protein in the avocado, that makes me feel full for a good amount of time. And then the cauliflower is just so yummy. Roasted cauliflower is the best thing in the world.
Yeah, and then you also know you're making progress when you sit around to talk about how delicious these foods that are good for you are. And you get excited about it. Yeah. And we're actually going to do a lot of that in the workshop. It's going to be a lot about tasting and real practical, you know, how do we make all these different tastes within the realm of it. How do we explore that? And I think that's going to be really exciting.
Are you going to talk about the different tastes, like sour, sweet?
Just generally. And part of the reason why we're just going to do it generally is that, you know, all of these systems, whether it's Ayurveda or Oriental medical theory or macrobiotics, you know, at a certain place, first of all, they conflict. So what happens when you find out, well, Ayurveda says seaweed is heating and, you know, different schools of thought say it's cooling. Mm-hmm. And so it's ultimately going to come down to your personal experience. So I just feel like we're better off creating a personal relationship with a flavor and following it through than looking at a chart in a book that says, okay, well, now, you know, I need something heating, so I'm going to eat seaweed. Right. I mean, I think that's beneficial. Don't get me wrong. But
some people don't want to do that. Some people do not want to pull out a book every time they put something
and
in there.
The book knowledge is going to work hand, you know, our joy in referencing those things is going to work hand in hand with our joy in just tasting things. So we're going to talk about the taste, but just in terms of experience, we're going to taste, just like we had this conversation about lemon, what is a sour taste? So we're going to have some different foods. And what is sour in nature? And what is bitter in nature? And what is, and just do that practice of tasting what those qualities in those foods are. And I think we're also going to find that they're not going to be absolute.
Right. And I think that's going to have the greatest impact because, again, it takes an abstract idea, like adopting a vegetarian diet, and it makes it real. It's like, these are the foods that we're talking about. This is the properties that you want to be looking for. It's a great, I mean, the fact that you're having the tasting part of it is really,
I think it's going to be really fun.
It's going to be really fun. It's going to be, any ideas on what you're going to be preparing?
Oh, definitely. We're going to make at least four different exciting ways of making something called khichdi, which is a standard, like, could be boring medicinal healing food of beans and whole grain, but we're going to look at how we can make that taste like Thai food and how we can make it taste like, we can make a bean and grain combo suit whatever fantasy we could imagine. It's just kind of like opening that doorway to let us experience that. And that's really, in the whole foods perspective, that's the core around which all the other things kind of rotate. So once we've discovered our possibilities there, then the decorations of the vegetables just become like added spice to what we're doing, and also herbs. And all of this kind of opens the doorway to learning to heal ourselves with food through cultivating those different awarenesses and possibilities. I mean, think about it. There's so many different combinations of herbs, and how do we simply learn that we can kind of play with those? And it sounds scary and complicated. It's not that scary and complicated. So once you've opened the door for yourself to experience those different tastes, we know herbs are medicinal. So we can heal ourselves. It's like, okay, I'm craving black pepper. Well, you don't need to know that maybe your digestion needs a little boost. You just add black pepper, you know?
You know, another aspect of this workshop that I think will be interesting is just the idea of chopping vegetables as a practice. Because a friend of mine had a spiritual teacher that every time she was, like, in chaos, like, when she would go to him in, like, just drama and chaos, he would say to her, go chop broccoli. Because somehow, and if you can kind of combine that and saying, okay, the fact that I'm chopping broccoli, because not only is this food going to nourish me, it's going to nourish all the people who eat it. Then you're developing even another dimension to your spiritual practice that can feed into your desire to stay with it. You know what I mean? It takes it out of just what you're personally getting out of it and what you're putting out there. It puts it into the realm of what you're putting out there as well. So
right. Although I wasn't envisioning that this class we'd go into a lot of detail about the art of chopping.
No, of course.
An art in and of itself that we could spend 2 hours on. And I thought you were just going to chop all the vegetables, Barbara.
I am.
That's Barbara's awareness practice for the workshop.
It is, and it's a good practice. Anyway, so we have run out of time. If you're interested in taking the class, please check out the Jiva Mukti website at www.jivamuktiyoga.com, or you can check out my website, which also has information on the class, at www.lifestylenutrients.net. Again, it's next Saturday, July 29th, from 4:30 to 7 at Jiva Mukti Yoga School in Union Square. Thank you, Natalie. I look forward
to doing
this class with you, and hopefully we could do others down the road. Thanks, Mike, for being my trusty engineer, and please come back and join us again. All right. Tune in next week for another edition of Healthy Lifestyles with Barbara Mendez on TribecaRadio.net.